Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, welcome to the show here on yet another Sunday afternoon. First one of September for 2017. If you're looking for some wrestling out there, KDW happening in Memphis, Indiana. You have WCWC in Portland, Oregon. Second round of television tapings there. And of course, like usual on a Sunday, you can find NWA Blue Collar Wrestling at the North Portland Eagles. QT should be a great Labor Day wrestling-wise. Lots of shows happening out there. Been lots going on, even up here in our neck of the woods.
Yes, Sunday, and will you also be zooming down to Portland, Oregon to see Blue Collar Wrestling?
I'm off this week, but they are continuing with their heavyweight title tournament, so it should be an outstanding night there at the North Portland Eagles. And I believe our guest has joined us. Do we have Mason Alexander with us?
Yes, you do.
Well, Mason Alexander, thank you for taking time here today to be with us. For the fans listening, you, of course, are out of the Midwest, work for a variety of promotions. But since it's your first time with us, we'll give you the first-timer's question to start. What led to you getting into the business of pro wrestling?
So you're asking me, like, what got me into the business? Well, I was basically, like, 13 years old. I started young. I started watching it first. I didn't really get straight to the wrestling part until I was, like, 18, because that has to be the age limit, but... But anyway, I started watching it with my dad, and ever since then, we just seen wrestling and watch wrestling a lot. We go to live shows all the time, and we actually enjoyed it, and I had a great time watching it all the time. And then there was a wrestling show down the road. I went to it. I talked to the promoter. They said I had to be 18 years old to train, and we had to wait, and that's what I did, and then the future hold, and I become a wrestler, like, around 2014, around January, and I've been wrestling for 3 years, so that's how it basically started throughout all that.
When you were looking to get trained and make your way into wrestling, did you have any type of athletic background that was going to prepare you for wrestling training, or did you go into wrestling without really a formal background in any type of athletics?
Well, I was in high school, around middle school area. I was running track, so I was kind of getting myself in shape. I played football for 2-3 years, and I did soccer. I basically did any type of sport that kept me fit throughout the year so I can stay fit and stay athletic no matter what. So... But
one of I'll go ahead.
You go ahead. You're fine.
One of the places that you compete is NWA Supreme. They, of course, an affiliate of the National Wrestling Alliance, which has been in the news lately, a little bit up in the air about what the exact future holds for the NWA. But as someone like yourself that is relatively new to the business, were you familiar with the history of what the NWA is, and did you have any feelings working for an affiliate of the NWA when you started there?
Not really. I've probably watched some stuff back in the day. Like, I watched DVDs and watched the NWA, like with Ric Flair and Arn Anderson and all the guys that helped build the way for NWA. I've watched them all the time on DVD. I didn't expect the NWA to be that many. I thought there was only like a couple or just one, but they've had all kinds of NWAs around the United States and everywhere. And I guess they're changing names now because I guess they're going to have like a new director or something like that for NWA, and they're like letting go a lot of NWAs now, and they're having them change their names and only keeping a very few NWAs now.
Now, there's a lot of affiliates that are still NWA members, and they all recognize one world's heavyweight champion. Currently speaking, that's Tim Storm. I know you don't work for many of the affiliates, and you're still pretty new at professional wrestling, really, but do you have any aspirations of perhaps someday attempting to go after what is commonly referred to as the oldest championship in the wrestling world, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship?
It'll probably take a long time for me to do that because I'm still new to this. I've been doing it for 3 years. I try to work myself every single year until I get myself into being it for like 5 to 10 years till I get more experience, and then I'll try to shoot myself into going for that opportunity in the future.
There's been a lot of talk in recent times on the internet and among a lot of fans, both casual fans and longtime fans of the business. The younger wrestlers today tend to do a lot more aerial type maneuvers, a lot of dives, a lot of offense that looks more like almost a dance than an actual wrestling competition. A lot of old-time wrestlers and promoters and so forth are not fans of this style. A lot of newer people are not fans of it, but incorporated into what they do because that's what they feel the fans expect out of wrestling today. Where do you stand on the use the term a lot of people throw out there, the flippy style of professional wrestling opposed to the more traditional wrestling styles?
When I get into wrestling and all that, I kind of worry myself into protecting myself so I won't get injured. And for doing the whole flippy style, it's very attemptive and it's kind of a risk to do. And no matter if you mess up one spot, no matter what it is, if he doesn't know what he's doing, then he could get injured and actually be paralyzed for life. And for my type of wrestling, if you see my wrestling, I'm not really all about the whole flippy and all that. I might do a couple of flips then and there, but I don't always do flips and do acrobats and all that. I do actually original wrestling and try to make it understandable for the fans, and I make the fans say that you're not a wrestler, you're just an acrobat or somebody from the circus, and I don't want them to think that, and I don't want to screw up and make everyone hate me for doing something that I want the fans to understand, but I don't want to do all these flips and then they don't understand. And that's the reason why I stick to the original and try and make it understandable for the fans, and that's what I want to do.
Out here in the Pacific Northwest, where, to my knowledge, you've not wrestled yet, a lot of the wrestlers have taken to doing a post-match antioxidant tea to try to rehydrate and cleanse out the system a little bit. Have you or anyone that wrestles in your area taken to the post-match tea drinking?
Like, explain, like, by the whole that, because I've never heard of that before. It's different.
Well, a lot of times wrestlers out here will drink tea after their matches to sort of rehydrate themselves and also try to doing antioxidant, where they're just flushing out anything that might be in their system by doing an antioxidant tea. Sort of a fad out here with the wrestlers.
Well, I like tea, but I didn't expect them to try to cleanse themselves. I've never heard that before around my area. Like, usually it's just a whole bottle of water ordeal. Like, basically, yeah, I never expect people to cleanse themselves after or before the match. It's different. Unless they're trying to pass a drug test or something. That's probably the only reason, I would think. But never heard that before in my area.
One of the things that has been brought up a lot in the last decade or so in professional wrestling is the concussion issue. Wrestling, of course, being a full impact sport, concussions are just part of it. But as we learn more and more on the long-term effects of concussions and the problems that they can create, it's been sort of a controversial topic in the last several years. Do you think that, as a general rule, promoters do a good job in protecting wrestlers from having long-term problems with concussions, or do you think it's something that the individual wrestlers are responsible to manage their own well-being?
Well, I've had one concussion before, so it's different. Like, you brought it up and everything, because I've had a concussion before. Like, I took a brain buster up the top rope and I landed on my neck and head wrong. To me, I really think it's us. I think it's the guys that do it. Like, it just depends on your risking yourself on doing a move to entertain the fans and everything. And the promoter ain't going to stop you for doing what you want to do. Like, if you want to do a spot, you want to do something different than everyone else, and then if the promoter says don't do it, you know, 90% of the time that the wrestlers don't usually listen to the promoter unless that you want to do something to finish out the match. But the whole spot there when I did that brainbuster really wasn't supposed to be a brainbuster. It was supposed to be a standing suplex, and we ended up messing up, and I hit my foot off the ceiling, and then we went right down to the ground, and I got a concussion from it. But it's basically us doing that. It's kind of like our fault in a way if we don't listen or we screw up in a match. That's the reason why we just got to, like, take care of each other and try to make it right and try to make sense out of it for the fans to understand as well.
Now, a lot of the fans won't understand this, but anyone that's had a match that they've been concussed during will probably understand this. A lot of times, once a wrestler gets a concussion, they will not remember the match per se. They won't have any recollection of having been in the match, but a lot of times they will have one of the better matches of their career almost out of an instinct. Did you have that type of phenomenon happen to you?
No. The reason why I didn't, in the match, yeah, I didn't remember that much. Only thing I probably didn't remember is right after the bump and feed, basically, like the hot spot. And then when I took the brain buster, the reason why I remember the whole finish is because I had someone film my match, and I watched it over and over and over and see what I did wrong. And I actually see what I did wrong, so that's the reason why I remembered my part. So I watched it after I got done recovering from my concussion.
So you don't actually remember it, you just witnessed it on a video after the fact.
Yeah, that's basically it, yeah. So that's the reason why I like some of my matches, so I know what I did wrong and what I got to do to fix it. And if something like that happens, then I can't remember. It may have been a good match, but we did one screw-up, and I ended up getting a concussion from it. That's the reason why I like to film the matches, so if something like that ever happens again, then I'll know how to fix it and not do it again in the future.
Based on what you said, I'd recommend leaving the part out about the top rope brain buster.
Yeah, that's true.
Or at least checking the height of the ceiling first.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is the ceiling. They usually don't have really big venues. They usually have it just a small little Family Dollar size ordeal with really small ceilings. But or trying to think about doing a standing suplex off the top rope and, yeah, losing your balance. That was a real bad thing, too, not having good balance.
And you mentioned how a lot of the venues don't have a really high ceiling, which is very common everywhere in professional wrestling. Anyone that has plied their trade on the independent circuit has pretty much wrestled in some strange venues over the course of their career, anywhere from open fields to shopping centers, so forth, so on. What would you say has been the strangest venue where you wrestled?
Well, I've been at different ones, been at a lot of different ones, but there's times I've wrestled outside of Food Lion before, like the place where you get food. I've B-dubs. I think it was cool to wrestle B-dubs because I can get something neat right after I'm done. But there's flea markets. A lot of people go to flea markets a lot. But, yeah, I really can't decide which one was the different one. I would say the Food Lion one because it's like people are getting groceries and you just randomly go outside, get to your car, and there's a random ring in the middle of the parking lot and you get to watch wrestling while you go shopping and getting your groceries.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by. I know QT has some questions, so I'm going to pass things to him.
Well, thank you, Sunday. Mason, we usually start out our second half of the show with the standard question, what's the hardest knife-edge chop you have ever received? And was it from a lady wrestler?
No, I would say it wasn't from a lady wrestler because I really haven't actually been in a ring with an actual woman before. So it's different. If I ever did, it'd be different. But I would say, like, you want me to, like, name off of a guy that's done it, or are you just saying if I have or not?
Sure. What's your hardest three knife-edge chops that you can remember, and who were they from?
Oh, I would probably say Raw Talent. He's from West Virginia. He's most well-known in West Virginia. He has a tag team partner named Zane Kane, and they go by Minorities. And, yeah, I would say he would probably be the one.
Oh, okay. He was the hardest, okay. How about your second hardest?
I'll say a guy that's well-known in the Indies, I would say Jason the Gift Kincaid.
Oh. Yeah, we've heard of him, yes. Holy smokes. Okay. Have any of those knife-edge chops drawn blood?
No. Like, I'm surprised that Jason didn't make me bleed at all, even though we was in Ohio when we went one-on-one with each other, but it wasn't really blood at all, so.
Wow.
But, yeah, he was, so.
Okay. Now, are there any lady wrestlers out there that you would, in the future, like to tag team with?
I would say Mickey Knuckles or Haley Shadows, probably, because me and Haley kind of have, like, the same kind of gimmick in a way. Like, she has the whole dark side. I kind of have my own dark side, but I kind of have, like, the voodoo side. But I really don't know much about her side, but unless I ask her. But yeah, mine's kind of like the voodoo violence kind of deal. So it's kind of like something that involves with New Orleans to be kind of a cool mix-up to my part.
Well, Mason, I saw your YouTube video entitled The Great Tygon versus Mason Alexander, July 10th, 2015. Now, that was a little bit of time ago, already over 2 years. Do you remember this match with this lucha wrestler, The Great Tygon?
Oh, yeah, I remember that because that was one of my big nights because that was the very first time I was ever in a six-sided ring. And when I first got there and saw, I was like, wow, I didn't expect to see it. Six-sided ring in the Indies because not that many places have a six-sided ring, and that was the only time they ever used that because they sold that ring because they had so much trouble with that ring. So if you ever watched that match and saw the boards start flopping up or the padding and all that was just going everywhere, that's the biggest reason why they had to get rid of it. But it was a good night. I had a good time, and it was a good experience and all that.
Well, the six-sided ring, there's definitely more tables and more turnbuckles. You said that you had trouble with the boards, or that the organization had trouble with the boards. Did you yourself land on any loose boards in that match? Because they can really screw up a knee and stuff.
Well, the landing part was kind of a little weird. It was kind of like really, really soft on one point. And when you run on it, it's kind of like just makes a lot of thumping noises every time when I was running through it. But the ropes were good and all that. It just depends on what way I have to run or what certain angle, because there's six sides. So you don't want to like run straight or turn to the side and get your whole body screwed up running through the ropes real bad. But the whole padding and everything with that was all right until other workers get to be in it without fixing it around intermission time. And it actually got a little worse for them because they actually would start sliding on top of each other, kind of like collapsing together. But to me, I was kind of like the second match of the night, so it wasn't really like doing anything bad on my part. I think it's just after intermission and after the third, fourth match, that's when it started getting worse for the ring.
Oh, okay. Was that match the only time you wrestled that night?
Yeah, that night, that was the only time, and that was the only time I've ever been in a six-sided ring, and that was the first time ever using that six-sided ring. So it was good my part that I actually could be part of that six-sided ring, at least for that one night. And so, yeah, I just did that one-on-one match and winning it off there.
Oh, okay. I wonder who got the ring after it was sold.
I have no idea. He hasn't really talked to me about who would buy that ring, but he did say he sold it, so at least someone had the money and wanted to buy a six-sided ring at the time.
And who was that told you about the ring? Was that one of the commentators?
Well, the promoter. Well, I usually, like, I talk to him sometimes, and he just told me that he sold it, and I don't know who really he sold it to. We don't, like, talk as much, but I know who had it and everything. And it was Michael Johnson from Visionary Championship Wrestling in Indiana. They had that ring, and now they got their own new ring now. It's a four-sided ring now, so he actually got just a regular four-sided ring now. So it's nicer, too. So.
Okay, Michael Johnson. Now, there's you, and I'm sure in your years of wrestling, you've heard horror stories about other wrestlers, and maybe this might have happened to yourself where you'll show up at an event and you'll get paid in hot dogs instead of cold, hard cash. Is Michael Johnson a pretty good provider monetarily? Is he pretty fair to the wrestler?
Well, there's times I've been to good shows that if I get paid maybe 75 or something like that, or there's times you're right, like the whole hot dog thing. I've had that happen to me before, but it wasn't for that company. But the company for Visionary, I didn't really get that much money, but I did get at least something that I could go home with, but at least I could walk out and say I got something out of it. But not really many promotions say that they can help out that much unless they're really picky on how much you want to pay their workers or how many people show up to that night. That night when we did the six-sided ring, we thought we was going to get a good crowd because of the six-sided ring, the names that we brought in and stuff, but we didn't get paid that night, but it was kind of like a fundraiser kind of deal. So that's how we basically ran that show.
Well, looking at that video, I've got to say that I've never seen that many tables at a wrestling event in my life. It was all tables and no freestanding chairs.
Yeah. They had a lot of gimmicks to sell, too. Like, they had so many, like, figures and cases. It was kind of like a yard sale kind of deal. They had so much stuff there that you can buy, but there weren't that many people there. So if there was a lot more people there, they would actually enjoy themselves and, like, see some good wrestling and buy some. I guess there was, like, an IC machine or some kind of, like, RV behind there. They were selling ice cream and stuff and in the building. and they had a bunch of stuff for sale too, like a bunch of wrestling masks and shirts and stuff like that. But there weren't that many people there to witness that, so they did, it was just their loss for not showing up and be a part of that.
Wow, okay. Well, now you mentioned Mickey Knuckles before. Sign Guy's pretty familiar with Mickey Knuckles. She's a pretty tough customer. Yes. Have you ever heard of a lady from Virginia named Casey Carlisle?
If I've seen her face, I probably would remember her, but there's sometimes I actually watch a little bit of their the girls fight. I think there's some like around Indiana, like around Jeffersonville, Indiana, or something like that. But I'm from Ohio, so there's sometimes I actually watch some of it. But like I know Crazy Mary more because I've seen her. I've worked shows around that area whenever she was working, and now she's at the Mae Young Classic now. So I'm proud of her for getting pushed where she's at now.
Well, that's strange. You know, you said you were from Ohio. The commentator said that for the match against the Great Tygon said that you were from New Orleans. You must have just visited there.
Well, actually, I never been to New Orleans. So the thing is about the whole New Orleans character is I'm a huge fan of the New Orleans Saints. It's not involved with wrestling or anything, but I'm just a football fan for the New Orleans Saints, and it has been my favorite team for years, and the New Orleans, the area is so neat and everything, about the whole voodoo and Mardi Gras and stuff like that. I think it was pretty neat, and it'd be a cool character to go by, and I bet it'd be like a good thing for the fans to like check out, because you know, you could like throw beads or have cool masks and stuff like that. I think it's pretty neat to do the whole Mardi Gras thing. That's why I went by the whole Voodoo of Violence, Mason Alexander. So.
Oh, okay. I had a chance to be stationed in New Orleans with the Coast Guard.
That's cool.
Yes. So I have seen Bourbon Street, especially on Mardi Gras. Yes. Okay. Well, you're not missing too much if you ever do go to Bourbon Street. It's very crowded.
I bet.
It's like being in the ring with King Kong Bundy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But, okay. Now, the commentator said your entrance music was a song by Moby. Do you remember the name of the song and if you're using it anymore?
The song's called Still Counting. And there's reasons why I go by the Still Counting, but it's kind of like, well, it's not really a shoot in a way. It's kind of like, you know, like I'm a new kid on the block. I'm coming here. There's a lot of veterans looking at me funny saying, oh, this guy's going to come and replace me. And to me, I'm like here just coming in and I'm in this building and I'm counting all the assholes in the room. That's what the lyric says. So I'm just going to come in and basically how I think to myself is like, well, if everyone's going to treat me disrespectfully and all that because I'm new and they're thinking I'm going to take their spot, then, well, I'm just counting all the assholes in the room. So that's the reason why I like that song. I like the band, Volbeat. It's one of my favorite bands. And I do still come out to it. But I have a new song coming out for next year. I got a brand-new custom theme by Mike Ruckus. If you heard of him, he's making all kinds of different themes for indie workers, and I'm going to debut it for next year and finish out the year with Volbeat so I can start next year with something new.
Wow, okay, all right. Now, you were slightly hesitant to shake the Great Tygon's hand as the match started. Is this because lucha wrestlers are notorious for having joy buzzers in their hand?
I don't know much about lucha workers, so this was the first time I've ever worked a lucha wrestler. That's the reason why that night was a really big night for me, because I've never faced a guy like him before, so I didn't know what I was going up with, and it was different experience for me to be a part of that. That's the reason why I was a little nervous at that night.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, Mason, you said that there was a lot of merchandise at that one event. How many T-shirts have you sold in an event? Or what's the greatest amount of merchandise that you have made in one night, dollar amount?
the most, like, the most money I've sold, I was pretty close to $100 on selling, like, wrestling t-shirts, pictures, and stuff like that. But there's times that you, it's kind of hard nowadays. Like, you really, really got to push yourself and really got to be well known in the business to actually sell shirts, because it's hard to get them to open their wallets and say, hey, I want to buy a $10 shirt. Like, you know, like, you could go into WWE and you'd be like, I can sell a $25 shirt, but I'm like, what's the difference between a $10 indie shirt and a $25 WWE shirt? Well, it's because you got to be well known in the business. And it is pretty hard to sell stuff unless you're well known. But I've maybe sold maybe a shirt or two, but not really that much, because I've only been in business for 3 years and I'm still trying to push myself every single weekend and going traveling everywhere I can, so I could be well known and sell my gimmicks as well.
Oh, okay. Yes, well, boy, that's just a t-shirt, just one t-shirt, an event, that doesn't get you much gas money.
Not really. Like, I tried to help out all the time and with the fans. Like, no, when I was a kid, when I went to wrestling shows all the time, they always say $5 a picture, and I only have $3, and they always like, well, sorry for your luck, kid. And when I grew up, I was like, you know what, I'm going to be a wrestler, and I don't want to, like, do that to a kid and say that, sorry for your luck, you don't have enough money. I want to try and make it fair for the fans and all that. It's like, I know everyone's, like, looking at me wrong because you're like, you ain't trying to make money in the business. I'm like, well, if you're trying to make money in the business, then you just need to get out, because what's the point in not enjoying what you love if you're just all about money all the time? And that's the reason why everyone looks at me funny, because I come there, love doing what I do, love to wrestle in front of the fans and everything and make a name for myself, but not just by because I want to have all the money in the world and trying to be, like, selfish about it. That's the reason why I don't even care that much about money when it comes to being a wrestler.
Now, Mason, have you had any young fans, we're talking like the grade school age, have they ever started up a fan magazine about you? Or tried to start a Mason Alexander fan club?
No, not really. Like, maybe I might just get some fan, like, talk about me all the time, or get someone to, like, buy pictures or take pictures of me and they put it on their Snapchat or something, or put it on their Instagram or something like that. Like, really not many people, maybe like a couple, but that's basically all they would do, is probably just take pictures every time they go to my shows, or when they know about my event page on my Facebook page, and they just add me on there and check it out, and they're like, okay, I'm going to go to every show and just take pictures and say, hey, I went and saw Mason Alexander every weekend, so.
Oh, wow, okay. All right, well, Mason, you said you were around 13 when you started watching wrestling with your dad. Was one of your dad's favorite wrestling formats or pack of wrestlers the NWO Wolfpack?
I would say not the NWA version, but not the Hollywood Hogan, but he liked watching, like, World Wrestling Federation, like, back in the early 90s when he watched. And, like, he started late, and I started late. I started, like, my first ever show I watched was WrestleMania 19, and I was 13 years old. So I'm 24, so that's the reason why a lot of people's like, you started really late. And I'm like, well, I was born in 93 when the first year of Raw, but I didn't watch it as soon as I was growing up because I wouldn't understand and wouldn't remember anything. But my dad just started around the World Wrestling Federation. He didn't really watch much of the WCW, but my uncle did a little bit. And he watched the Monday Night Wars live on TV, and that's what he told me.
Oh, okay. Which one of your dad's favorite segments, Booker T and Goldust, when they were interacting?
I wouldn't think that. Like, he wasn't really much into the mid-card kind of guys like that, but he was liking, like, Sting and, like, Goldberg and guys like that, like the Giant, like, watching the world heavyweight guys going at it more than guys like that.
Oh, okay. All right. Did your mom used to watch wrestling? Your mom.
Yeah, my mom really didn't get much into it, but my dad was the only reason why I got into the business by watching it, because my mom wasn't really watching that because she didn't like it, because she didn't like people getting hurt, and she'd be like, well, I don't want my son to grow up to do something that he could get hurt and paralyzed for life about. And she still to this day always tells me every time, she's like, where are you going this weekend? Where are you going that weekend? And I'm like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Like, I always have to argue all the time about, I love what I do. I love doing it every single weekend, and it's a fun thing, and it's what I like doing. And she don't like the fact that I get hurt sometimes and paying for medical bills sometimes if I do get hurt, but I haven't paid for any for a while, so.
Oh, okay. Well, now, you told Sign Guy earlier that you went out for track and field and football when you went to junior high and high school. I'm going to guess that you were a wide receiver in football.
Well, it was kind of like a tailback kind of deal. Like, I had the speed, so I was doing punt and kickoff returns and all that. Whenever they kicked the ball to me, I catch the ball, I run it to the other end, make touchdowns. But they usually lose me a speed because I had two records in high school. I had the 4x2 relay and the 200-meter dash. Can't remember the actual record, but I think it was like a 2:34 or something like that. Like, it's like 2 minutes, 34 seconds on the 4x2 or something like that. But yeah, I did pretty good. I was really fast. And now when it comes to me running now, I'm kind of a little slower now, but I'm still just trying to get myself in shape into the wrestling more than I am trying to get myself to speed, because, you know, there ain't a point in running too fast and going so quick in matches because it just screw you all up going too quick. That's just why I like to pace myself when I do my matches and not screw up.
Well, I'm going to guess that your top time in the 200 meters in high school was right around 22.1.
My school wasn't really that fast because I think their high school record was 25, I believe, and I beat it with a 24.1 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
200. So that was kind of like we weren't really that fast, because even though it took years and years to beat it, but like it took me just that little bit of time to get that, and it was only like a minute faster than, or a second faster than the original spot.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mason, did you hear about the late 1960s and early 1970s rock and roll super groupie Cynthia Plastercaster?
1960s, 1970s is like a blur to me because, like I said, I was born in 93, so that's like another 30 years down the road later when I was born, and that was 30 years ago for me. But, yeah, I haven't heard any of that.
Oh, okay. Well, she took molds, plaster molds, of several rock stars' independent biological microphones, or should I say the part of the body that men value the most. She took molds of rock stars like Jello Biafra of the Dead Kennedys, Frank Zappa, Led Zeppelin, and she did approach John Lydon of the Sex Pistols, but he told her to wind off. My question is, would you ever pull a finished product of hers, a Plastercaster, out of mold, if it was supplied by her out of your trunks?
That would be very different, and I wouldn't know how to answer that question, because that'd be different, because I've never had that happen before, so it'd be kind of an iffy if that ever happened.
Oh, okay. Now, if you want, after you can see just a word search on Cynthia Plastercaster. Yes, she was infamous in the rock and roll scene. I think she may even be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Ohio.
Oh, looks like he dropped the call, QT.
Oh, darn. Boy, I hope I didn't freak him out too much.
Oh, there he is. I believe we got him back.
Hey, okay. Service.
All right, well, Mason, you can do a Google search on Cynthia Plastercaster, and I believe that she is an inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, okay. That's in Ohio, yes. Okay. Well, Mason, you and the great Tygon both seem to have good boots and knee pads. Have you ever had any ankle injuries? Because it looks like your boots are very good.
No, I haven't had any ankle injuries yet, but I'm always knocking on wood every time about another injury because I really don't want any more injuries after that concussion I had a couple years ago. But I have hip pads and all that, so I don't really use boots anymore. But I try to do everything I can. Like, if I ever had that happen, like if I have like a little bruise or something like that, I kind of tape it up a little bit or put like an ankle brace on so I won't get hurt for the next shows, so I try to recover myself every time.
Okay, out of these four injuries, which one would you fear the most? Torn ACL, cracked rib, pulled hamstring, or concussion?
I would say cracked rib.
Oh, cracked rib, okay.
Yeah, I would say cracked rib would hurt. Because, you know, like your whole side, you know, like you got to use your sides a lot. Like, if you bump or anything like that, it could rattle your ribs or get speared or anything like that, body slammed or anything. Your whole ribs would be, like shattered and all that and could ruin your kidneys if that happened.
Yes. Yes, your ribs are very important. Now, you mentioned, of course, about your concussion. The NFL has had a huge issue over the years with concussions. Even a couple lawsuits. It's just that the football players are getting bigger and faster. Even at the collegiate level, here out in Washington State, we have a player for the Washington State Cougars who goes 6'9", 368 pounds.
That's different.
Yeah, that's pretty big. It used to be back in the 50s and 60s, your biggest lineman up to date till the 1960s was a player called Big Daddy Lipscomb, who topped the scales at 300 pounds. And that was like a freak of nature. He was like 6'3", 300 pounds. Now you've got high school players approaching that. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot more like bigger weight guys, like pretty close to 300 to 400 pounds on doing linemen and stuff, and it's like, well, if they could just have the speed, that'd be great. But you know, usually it just goes by the weight and all that. But if they just have the speed, it actually help out a lot. But they have the weight and the strength, so that's basically what we have in our football.
Now, in your travels in the Midwest, have you ever had a chance to meet another big man, Bam Bam Bigelow?
No, I haven't met Bam Bam Bigelow yet, but I've met Marty Jannetty, Ricky Steamboat, guys like that. But I've had a seminar with Ricky Steamboat, and I had a match with Marty Jannetty not too long ago.
Oh, how'd you do?
It was pretty good. Like, you know, I had to worry about his ankle because, you know, Marty's ankle was really swollen up pretty bad. We had a good match. Everything, we took it real slow. We didn't go too fast. We just did it his pace, and we had a good match, and everyone enjoyed it. That's all that mattered.
Wow, fantastic. Okay. Well, Mason, who are some of the better referees that you have that have reffed your matches? Some of the referees that have stood out?
I have very rare... rare times with refs. I've had one good ref I can just name. That's Brandon Ashworth, and he goes around West Virginia. He's actually a promoter for a promotion in West Virginia called XMCW. He's literally probably like the best ref I've had in years, and the others is kind of like they just throw whoever they want to be a ref, and they just put a shirt on. That's it. Like, here, go ref. But he takes it to the level, like, it don't matter. If you call a spot and all that, and if you low globe right in front of him, he's going to DQ you, like, flat out. Like, that's what a ref does, and he does right off the bat. But there's times that I could get low globe, and the ref just looks at me funny. like, I just got hit in the nuts, and that should be disqualification. But you're looking at me. He's like, well, is that the finish? Well, it's going to be the finish because he low-blowed me. But
oh, my.
Literally,
okay.
He's the only one that would do that. So.
Wow, okay. All right, since you're lost to the great Tygon, have you met him again in the ring?
No, like, he lives in Indiana. Like, I haven't seen him when I ever went back to Indiana. Like, I think he's real busy going elsewhere, like Illinois and Michigan and stuff like that, because I've looked around to see where he goes. Me, I go the other direction. I've been going to Kentucky a lot. I've been going West Virginia and Ohio and all the other places and all that. But, yeah, that was the only time I've ever seen him, is that one time, and we get to work each other that one time as well. And, yeah, I haven't seen him ever since after that.
Have you ever wrestled in the state of Missouri?
No, but I don't know if you have to have a license to wrestle in there, because I know a few places have to have a wrestling license to wrestle in those states.
Yes. Okay. All right, well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy. And good luck if you do that YouTube search or a Google search of Cynthia Plastercaster.
All right.
Thank you, QT. Well, Mason, one of the things that a lot of wrestlers spend a lot of time and effort on is getting the best-looking wrestling gear. Some people spend countless hours designing it, having it made. Some people even make their own. I know you've got different sets of gear yourself that you use. What would you say is your favorite set of wrestling gear that you have?
I would say my tights. Like, I have all kinds of trunks. Like, I have different colors. I got, like, green, blue, red, black. I have all kinds of them. But I like my tights the most because they're so much detailed, and it took literally a year to get them made because I don't know what was going on. I think he was really busy or something, but it took literally a year. But it was worth the wait because it's really good. I got, like, belt loops in them. I got a dream catcher on one side, and I got an owl skull on the other. It actually just goes real neat and looks neat.
I know you are always kind of looking around when you're a wrestler and seeing who has what type of gear, getting ideas for your own, seeing what looks good, what looks bad. I know wrestlers talk quite a bit on who made which set of gear for whom and so forth. Just on your own observations, who would you say is one of the best gear makers on the market right now?
I don't talk to that many, but I'll talk to, like, the ones I actually go by. I go by Kayfabe Gear. It's on Facebook. They have a Facebook page. They make all kinds of gear. TNT Gear makes pretty good gear as well. They're just new, recently started making all kinds of different gears. They've made me a couple pairs of trunks, but the one I use the most is the one that made my tights, and that was Kayfabe Gear. And even though it's kind of a little pricey, but they actually make the detail logos and designs really good, and that's who I go by.
Now, QT talked about this a little bit earlier as well. Some promotions, when you finish up the night, want to give you a hot dog and a handshake, of course, and it's just part of the business, kind of a learning experience a lot of time for not only the wrestlers but the promoters as well. I know some shows are a little bit different. There's a lot of one-off type of shows that wrestlers do. You don't have to name names or anything like that, but in your career so far, what's been the strangest compensation that someone had to actually offered to give you for professional wrestling?
Like, besides pay, like, what would they give me?
Exactly.
Really? Probably like a, not a coupon, but like a gift card. I would say. Probably like a Shell's gift card or something like that, but they didn't really have that much on it. I would say probably like $10 off of it, but he said it was $25 on it for some reason. And it was kind of like a used gift card, I think.
Used gift card is definitely different.
Yeah. So I guess he was looking through his wallet and he was trying to think about what to give me. So he looked and looked and I was like, well, I'm going to go ahead and give you this. I think there's $25 on it. So he gave me that and I went and got gas and it stopped at 10. I was like, wow, okay. It was different.
Definitely unique. I've not heard that one before. Obviously, you wrestle in a few different states. You've hit Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia, a few more, I think. But there's a lot of states out there you have not yet wrestled. What would be a couple of the states out there that would be your dream locations to go wrestle?
Florida. Florida, Florida, Florida. That's my favorite. That's one of my favorite states. I've always wanted to go there. My goal is that for next year. Louisiana, Nevada, and California would probably be my four that I would love to go. And Louisiana is probably the only one out of those four that would have to need a license. But that's what I would go with is those four.
Now, I believe that Louisiana has a commission. I believe you have to be licensed there. I might be wrong, but last I knew, I believe there's a license there. Kentucky, also a commissioned state or commonwealth, if you will. Dealing with commissions are often a mixed bag for wrestlers if they get licensed in multiple states. Just as a general rule, what's your feelings on wrestling commissions as they relate to professional wrestling in 2017?
I really don't know, but what are you explaining? Like what can we do for the next year? Is that what you're asking, or?
No, just what your feelings are as far as what commissions do for professional wrestling here in the current time, because I know when they started having commissions decades ago, they were a different thing for a different era in professional wrestling. So just as they relate now in the current climate of pro wrestling, what's your feelings on how commissions work for wrestling?
I don't know, but that's a kind of a question I wouldn't know how to explain, because that's usually like what the guys that do, that run shows, would actually know more about the how to change things. But I have a Kentucky license and Virginia license, and it'd be nice if they can, you know, like bring down the prices and all that. I think that'd be really good, but they're doing the whole competition and everything like that and trying to get promotions out of their areas, so they try to raise the prices up for some reason. But like that'd be the only thing I would say to do is either bring the prices down or try to find a way to get them down. And that's usually what their biggest priority is trying to get every promotion out as they can and try to make as much money as they can as well.
Well, we have a few minutes left in the show today. I want to give that time to you so you have ample time. If you would like to say anything to the listeners, plug and promote anything you would like, your social media, your upcoming appearances, merchandise, your favorite laundromat, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
I just got a little bit to say. I got a Facebook page, Mason Alexander. Right now I got around 662 likes, but I have all my matches that I possibly have done. I have picture promos. I got event stuff that you know where exactly where I'll be at. This Saturday I'll be in Somerset, Kentucky for Cage Fury 10. in Somerset, Kentucky. Starts 7:30. September 10th, I will be in Bowling Green, Kentucky for United Pro Wrestling. I'll be making my debut in United Pro in Bowling Green. And then the 16th of September, I'll be in Illinois for the first time ever. So you guys get to see me in Illinois. But, yeah, if you have any questions, you can go on my Facebook page, message me for event information. I don't have a Twitter or anything like that, but I do have a Facebook page. I'd like you guys to like it up. But other than that, thanks for having me on the show. And even though I'm clear from the other side of the United States, from Ohio and all that, but I'm different than most people. But thanks for having me on the show, and hope to hear from you again.
It's been our pleasure to have you on the show. I wish you the best of luck as you continue forward with your career. We would love to have you back again sometime on the show. Fans, get out there, support Mason Alexander and what he does. Great young talent. I think he's going to get better and better as time goes on. We will be back with you next week. Next Sunday, it is WCW week. We'll have some former members of the World Championship Wrestling roster on the show to discuss that promotion. Should be an interesting time, to say the least, I think, next week. So make plans to be with us next week, and we will talk to you then.
Oh, okay. Once a man is left, he's most likely